out.
So the winners from last week. So last week's question was, sorry. So last week's question was, name us just one member of the Sinister Six. I would have taken absolutely anyone from the Sinister Six, and you know, there's many a different.
There's quite a few, you know. Obviously, Dale read them. He gave you a list. You didn't even have to go on Google. You just had to watch. Dale told you, and then you just, you know, that was it. You went in the comments section.
Kind of went for it,
then,
didn't you?
Yeah.
So we had quite a lot, and I can't give you the exact six because there are so many different ones. But the ones we did get in were Dr. Octopus, Sandman, and then Kraven the Hunter. So they were all very, very good shouts there. Other ones you could have had were Chameleon. Or Carmeleon, however you'd like to pronounce
Shocker.
It. Shocker was in there. Electro's been in there. Venom's been in there at some point as well. I'm pretty sure Hydro Man got a cameo with him.
Yeah.
Mysterio's been in one of the versions as well. Rhino.
Did you say Venom?
Venom. Venom's had a stint. Anyway, the winner is with Dr. Octopus, Dragon Shark Ice.
There you go, Dragon Shark Ice. That book is winging its way onto you. We'll be in touch. You don't have to do nothing else. All right?
Bing, right. Bang, bosh.
Bosh. Bing, bong, bong. Right, Dale. This week's competition, I'm just going to get.
So, for those of you that haven't... You've been in, like, in a hole.
In a massive hole.
This is Rick and Morty Pocket Like You Stole It. This is a individual issue of Rick and Morty, the amazing animation with its crazy adult humour and themes. It is all available on Netflix if you haven't had a chance to check it out. So check out seasons 1 to 2. They've even been live streaming it as well. They've live streamed all season 1 and 2 back to back, including episode 1 of season 3.
This is my new guilty pleasure. Rick and Morty at the moment is my new guilty pleasure.
It is so funny.
It is funny, quirky. It's adult in places, fun in places. It's everything you want from just a quirky Adult Swim cartoon. Dale, have you got a question?
Oh, sorry, my phone's going off. Do I have a question? Yeah, I've always got a question.
Come on, Dale.
To know, very, very simply, is what character does Andy Serkis play in the Lord of the Rings franchise?
Oh! Is there a clue?
No, why should you need a clue? I mean, come on, people.
There's gonna be a clue. So, question again, please, Dale.
Name me the character that Andy Serkis plays in the Lord of the Rings franchise.
If you don't get that, you've been in a cave somewhere with Tom Hanks and, I don't know where else you're going to be from that. Remember, guys... we've got obviously lots coming up in a few weeks. We've got Manchester Comic Con coming up, guys, so don't miss out on that. Dale, what is our rewind?
For next week. Right, okay, so as
Come
most
on.
Of you know, there is a massive film coming out next week, and we have already mentioned the director. However, we do have a little bit of an issue. It will be very, very tight to try and get the film up for you guys. So we will try our very, very best to get Dunkirk up for you guys.
Oh, yes.
We will try. There is no guarantee that it will be up in time for Saturday. So it might be delayed till Sunday.
Yep.
So possibly Sunday, 10 a.m., Dunkirk for our next episode. And our rewind for that week will be The Prestige. Now, most people, when you go to Christopher Nolan, you'll go Inception. Now, don't get wrong, Inception is an outstanding film. Sometimes we could go with Batman as well. But Prestige is one of them underrated films that I don't think many Christopher Nolan fans have actually seen, or many people that know his work have actually seen. And it's a very, very good, very clever, underlying film that I don't think gets as enough credit as it deserves.
So, next week's rewind, The Prestige. Looking forward to watching that. Next week's review is obviously Dunkirk, guys. Remember, if it's not up 10 a.m. Saturday, it'll be up 10 a.m. on Sunday. Don't miss out on anything. Remember to like, subscribe. Remember, Comic-Con is coming up soon. MCM Comic-Con at Manchester. There'll be loads of interviews going up across the whole weekend of that. Also, guys, check out our Facebook page. The Stranger Things 2 post is going to be going up over the next couple of days. Just keep in contact. We love speaking to you. You obviously like speaking to us. Like, subscribe, comment. Like I said, press that notifications, but obviously don't miss out on anything. Thank you very much for watching. My name's been Tony.
I've been Dale.
And we'll see you all next week with Dunkirk.
After all of that, And the Colonel, like Tony was saying, the Colonel is an absolute badass throughout this entire film. You have no sympathy for him whatsoever, but Woody Harrelson plays him really, really well because he is, in his mind, he's doing the right thing. He's not doing anything wrong. He's fighting for what he believes in.
Yeah, he does.
And then for him to meet his end by ironically getting the virus himself and killing himself, it's kind of like poetic justice.
I mean, obviously, when the film's going through its motions, I got a touch of Western. I got a touch of, like, a bit of Django, bit of Revenant. And it was kind of Caesar really finding himself and finding out what he's really made of. Because at the moment, when you've watched, obviously, Rise and Dawn, you kind of just think to yourself, he's only finding his feet now, and in Dawn, he's trying to be this leader, and he's trying to just make sure that people follow him for the right reasons. Now, obviously, in War, he's trying to fight them inner demons because obviously his family's been killed, and he's on the edge, and you can see it. Obviously, the CG is so good in this, and Andy does such a great job that you can see the pain in his face at different points.
It's really hard to tell that the apes are actually CG, the locations
were beautiful. Stunning, absolutely beautiful. For like the forest scenes,
the snow,
and then
as well,
the snow scenes. It was such a well shot film. For me, though, thinking about it as a whole, the story really, I don't know, it wasn't strong enough for me, in a sense. I thought it was epic.
It was a story of revenge, and that's kind of what it was.
It was a straight, like Dal just said, it's a straightforward story of revenge. It could have had a couple more little nooks and crannies to it, like a couple of little twists and turns, which would have made it probably slightly better, which would have, done the trick, really. But you were always playing off the feelings of Andy, always playing off the feelings of Woody. There was one soldier, which, is...
That confused me a little bit.
Yeah, he was there all the time. And I was thinking to myself, is he kind of the human that's going...
I thought he was going to turn and help the apes out.
Was he the confused human? Was he like, do I help apes? Do I help my kind? Like, he was just confused. Obviously, I'm not going to say what happens or anything like that to him, but to be quite fair, the comic relief I found was really refreshing in it. Obviously, Bad Ape, and it wasn't to a point that he was really silly. It wasn't to a point where you was kind of like, can you crack me a joke, please? Because I need a bit of comic relief.
Yeah, when we say comic relief, it wasn't subtle, it wasn't making people laugh out loud. It was a nice kind of break from the darkness of both the humans doing to the apes and what the apes are doing back, and just the whole situation. He was kind of the diffuser of the whole tension, which it worked out really, really well because it was such well placed, and it was just because obviously he was learning to speak and he was learning to develop under himself, and just him being flamboyant. Like, there's this scene where Caesar and all the other apes walk out of this house into the snow, and they go to They're carrying on their journey to the Colonel, and this bad ape comes out in a body warmer and a woolly hat.
That just made it for me. Like, as soon as we were introduced to him, and then he come out like that was brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. I mean, obviously, it was, like I said, the film was trying to be something which it didn't really need to be. And I'm trying to say they were trying to take it, like, obviously it needed to be this deep, dark, fantastic.
Yeah, it had to have more in it.
Had to have just such deepness to it, and it didn't. The way it was portrayed was good. Bit more, slightly light-hearted, I think, within a couple of bit more twists and turns in it. It would have been absolutely epic. You feel for Caesar, because there is moments in it where there is torture and stuff like that, and obviously you kind of think to yourself, you kind of, like Dal said, sometimes in the films, you don't know whether to root for the humans or you don't know whether to root for the apes. And once you've got halfway through this film, you're then going, kind of side with the apes here. Like, we need to sort ourselves out here. Do you know what I mean? But apart from that, I absolutely love it. Locations were great. You know, Woody Harrelson was great. Andy Sack was great. Everything was great. I just wanted a bit more lightheartedness and just a few more twists and turns along the way.
I mean, I kind of get it. It's kind of all predictable. I think that's my biggest issue with the film, is it was all predictable. You were kind of like, right, He's welcomed his son back. He's happy to see his son. We've seen this story before. We see how this goes.
Yeah,
someone close to him dies, he goes on a revenge, and you can kind of predict it as you kind of go.
Yeah.
And it's the other little twirky parts in it that kind of take you off the beaten track that's already been there.
I mean, for me, obviously, this was going to be kind of my kind of, you know, one before Matt Reeves then goes on to do The Batman. So looking at his cinematography, you know, stuff, his direction, I liked it. I liked the look of the film. I liked the feel of the film. It was just a story, really, for me that let it down. So I feel I'm ready to score this down, unless you've got any budgets or anything you want to bring up, my man.
Not on this one. It's a bit too early for the budgets. Bit too on early this one, for but budget yeah, I'm talk. Quite happy to score.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, you go first now, please. I want you to go first.
I think it's a nice kind of solid 7 out of 10. I don't think it's progressed massively from Rise or Dawn, but I don't think it's kind of faltered from that era either. I think it's kind of all got a little bit better. And it kind of justifies its means.
Oh, it does. I mean, obviously, these have been such steady films, obviously, from Rise, Dawn, and now War. They've kind of been on point, and what you really expect from a Planet of the Apes film for this new generation. Obviously, Rise setting that benchmark from the very, you know, very beginning. For me, I loved it. Cinematography. I do agree with Dow, 7 is so justified for this film. So here on the Weekend Buzz, guys, War for the Planet of the Apes gets a 7 out of 10. So, on to last week's winners, Dow. I want to know who's won last week's competition. Refresh us.
By seeing the Wasp kind of like poster. I don't know if you've seen that. Surely, I swear you pointed that out to me.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like a poster at the E3 convention or the convention, and it's basically a picture of the Wasp in her costume, obviously showing us the lead up from the end credits of Ant-Man.
Well, to be quite fair, I'm really looking forward to, obviously, it's Ant-Man and, was it Ant-Man and the...
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, to be quite fair to you. I enjoyed thoroughly the original Ant-Man because it was on the same lines as obviously Guardians, Doctor Strange, you know, these films that you were kind of like,
you don't know about the character, but
can't set a benchmark in my head. Go sit down and watch it, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Looking forward to seeing what Ant-Man brings to the table in Infinity Wars as well. Among any more characters,
well, we saw him in Civil War, didn't we? Obviously. Yeah. Paul Rudd's done really well.
Paul Rudd's so good.
I mean, obviously there's a lot that happened with Ant-Man. Obviously Edgar Wright's supposed to be directing it, and then obviously dropped out. And then there was other casting choices. So when I saw some of these other casting choices, I was like, yeah, he'd be awesome, is it? And then Paul Rudd got announced, and I was like, I'm not too sure. And when I actually watched it, like, that guy went through intense physical training, which all actors do for the Marvels and DC movies. And he looked the part, he played the part, he's attitude, like his quirky kind of comic attitude, made Scott Lang the best kind of character to have, and it worked really, really well.
Oh, really? He brought the comedic value straight off the bat, as well as a serious side you endeared to him, which I thought was absolutely brilliant, and I love that. Are you ready to go on to the next one, Dale?
Yes, so news story number 3.
So, Bond. Let's talk Bond.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig is reportedly going to be doing the next James Bond film, Bond 25, but also linked to it is Christopher Nolan to direct. Now
that would be interesting.
He was linked, so basically this is the chain of events. Daniel Craig is obviously been reported to be doing Bond 25. Nolan has been approached, but also Nolan has also said in an interview, since he's been doing Dunkirk kind of promotion, that he would only ever do Bond if it was to be reinvented. Now, to me, that's kind of like, I would have done Bond if he didn't cast Daniel Craig and I could have had creative control.
Tom Hardy.
Oh, you're dropping that.
Well, no, Tom Hardy's his kind of like go-to guy at this moment in time, isn't it? Like, I mean, he's done quite a lot of films with Tom Hardy. He's done Inception with Tom Hardy. He also had... he's got Tom Hardy in Dunkirk. As long as it ain't bloody Harry Styles, I'll be all right. But it's interesting because obviously Daniel Craig was adamant he wasn't going to return as Bond.
Yeah, he was completely adamant.
And they obviously, like, the Bond franchise have obviously gone to him, look, here's a blank check, sign it, fill in whatever you want, and we'll kind of do it for you. Which I don't think they should have gone to that
far extent, because there was obviously people that were lined up for it. Like, I would like to see Idris Elba do it, purely because, like, not, like, don't get wrong, not because he'd be the first black Bond, but generally I think Idris Elba is a great actor.
Yeah.
And whether he's black, white or whatever, I think he would have been a good candidate for it, along with people like Tom Hiddleston and Tom Hardy. And don't get me wrong, like, Daniel Craig's done a good job, but none of the movies that Daniel Craig has done have been, like, absolutely outstanding.
No.
You look at Casino Royale. Now, the only thing that I can always remember about Casino Royale is the poker scene.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's actually really attractive and that draws you into the film. The rest of it is a bit okay. After that was Quantum of Solace.
Yeah.
That didn't really hit the note.
No, it did. That was kind of weird. Like, the story was just, like, skew-iff.
And then you had...
And the villain wasn't that strong.
What was the one after Quantum of Solace?
Spectre.
Now, Spectre was really good.
Yeah, Spectre was on point.
Hang on, what was Spectre? What was... Oh, yeah, because we got Skyfall. Spectre was really, really good. I thoroughly enjoyed that. But it confused the hell out of me, because I was told that Casino Royale was supposed to go back to the beginning. It was supposed to be the first Bond. How he became Bond was his first mission. So then when... what was we just talking about? The one... I'm trying to... there's four names. I keep jumping around. When we went back to the one with Benicio Del Toro... Google, help me.
We've lost it here.
Brain has gone absolutely...
gone to mush.
But I know who you're on about.
Guy that plays Hannibal.
No, that's in Casino Royale.
Mads Mikkelsen, then.
Mads Mikkelsen was that one. So yeah, Quantum of Solace kind of sucked.
Yeah.
And then...
Spectre
was a lot better. It had like
It went Skyfall then Spectre, I swear.
Yeah, it did, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh my god, we are having an absolute
nightmare with James Bond today.
Yeah, Christopher Walken's Spectre. Sorry, Spectre was 2015.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can remember is bloody Sam Smith song and the Adele song.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Anyway, Skyfall was really, really good, incredibly good. And it confused me because obviously M got killed in it, and I was like, well, isn't this supposed to be going back to the beginning? Javier Bardem, who played Silva, was a really, really good bad guy, and I thoroughly enjoyed him as the bad guy. So that was really good. Then when we get to Spectre, that kind of fell back off the Richter scales. It wasn't that good. So what I'm saying is, they shouldn't have offered a blank check to Daniel Craig. Yes, don't get me wrong, he plays a really good Bond, but it's not as if everyone was going, we don't want to touch the Bond role. And I don't think there was loads of people who... Like, it wasn't as if the four movies that Daniel Craig had done were impeccable and were the best Bonds around.
No.
If they were, then you could justify going, here's a blank check, we really need you back. But I think they could have looked elsewhere. I think they could have honestly gone, Christopher Nolan, yes, you can do it. You can't reinvent the story because we kind of already got it, but you can put your own mission into it.
Cast
who you want.
See, I'd be slightly opposite. I'd be like, Chris Nolan, you want to do something... Fine, you have free reign. Do it. We want to see the Nolan's Bond. Like, if you want to do it, go for it. Like, here's the reins.
There's no point in redoing the franchise because they kind of already done that with Daniel Craig's by going back to the first mission. I think the timeline's a little bit skew-iff with it at the moment, and that kind of needs setting straight. But it's interesting to see how it goes with the new one coming up, and if they learn from their mistakes, obviously, like I said, Skyfall was a very, very strong one, so they probably just need to go back to that one.
Definitely. On to the next bit of news, Justice League news. Now, obviously, it's highly anticipated, this Justice League movie, and once they added, obviously, the talented British actor Kieran Hines as the iconic villain, is it Steppenwolf?
Yeah, Steppenwolf.
He's not really said much since obviously he's had this because he's probably not allowed to, not even allowed to say nothing. But the thing was, he's never met any of the other cast. Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe he's never met any of the other cast. Like, unless the bad guy is just going
to
get...
He never got a chance to meet any of the cast members in Justice League. Here's what he had to say. This is a quote. No, I don't know whether they're all afraid to come and meet me. No, they weren't really, because it's imaginary. You do it all with green screen. That was another challenge. You could say, yeah, but it was quite fun and very encouraging in what you do. Suggesting over here, look over here, imagine that, do this over here. They're coming at you now.
It's so bizarre that they've never actually, that they haven't filmed an actual battle scene between Steppenwolf. So basically what you're telling me is when we see a battle scene between Steppenwolf and the Justice League, they're not in the same room.
No. He put literally as well, he says, I'm sorry, I'm not in costume either. I didn't have a costume when I was doing it. It was all done in motion capture. So this is going to be, I reckon, along the same lines as Thanos, to be quite fair. I reckon Thanos is exactly the same. And there was also Tom Holland said when he was doing some work on Infinity War, some of the stuff he had, literally, when he was told to look left or right, they were holding up tennis balls. So he could look at a tennis ball. So, you know, with all these actors and, you know, people that are involved in this film all have, you know, hectic schedules around making these films.
Yeah.
You can see why, you know, they'd be like, right, main villain, right, go, green screen.
I think that's the shame about this kind of, like, I get doing it part and part, and I get stuff that when their availabilities aren't right. But there are certain points when you're going to lose the chemistry that you need. Like, you need to see the chemistry of Wonder Woman actually hating this character she's fighting because of, you know, like, so she can actually be angry at a physical person rather than be angry at this tennis ball. So I can see, like, I understand why it needs to be done, but I think there are ways where you need to marry this stuff together to make it have the more authentic kind of feel and look.
Definitely, definitely. I've got one more news story which I want to put across, but Dal, have you got any more for this segment?
No, I'll let you take the last one.
Last one is obviously something that's close to my heart, which I love, and that is Stranger Things. Yeah. Now, we've got season two coming out later on this year. We have a release date, which is October the 27th. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's coming out around the Halloween.
So Netflix put up on their Twitter page that, you know, it's going to be coming out. The tweet says, some doors can't be closed. Season 2 of At Stranger Things arrives on October 27th. So they put that up with a poster, which is absolutely epic. It's the four kids on their bikes, all 80s up to the eyeballs. And then this mysterious creature literally lurking in the top right hand corner.
Quoting our good friend Jeff from Rooster Teeth. Stranger Things is basically a blowjob to the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. That is one of probably my best quotes in one of the best interviews I've probably ever had.
It's a one sentence that sums up Stranger Things. And, you know, I think it just hits the nail on the head. You're like, if you were to do a tagline or if you were to do a poster and you would get away with this stuff, that's all you need to put and people would just...
Exactly. I mean, I've watched you've watched it as well, Dale, haven't you?
Yeah.
Stranger Things. Absolutely epic. Fell in love with the kids, fell in love with the storyline, and really looking forward to October the 27th, which is a Friday. Do you reckon I could call in sick now, Dale?
Believe it or not, 2 weeks before that will be Friday the 13th as well.
Wow. You really had to go there, didn't you?
I did, I just did the maths quickly in my head and I was like, take 14 off of 27. Oh, Friday the 13th, oh, cool, there you go.
Nice.
Especially in October.
Going to be watching Jason on that as well then, are we? I reckon we should do that.
There's supposed to be a new Friday the 13th.
Yeah, there is.
And I think that's when they're going to release it.
Wow.
They were supposed to release it in February and I was like, what? Why would you do that to yourself?
Do you know what I'm really hyping myself up for? That I'm kind of really...
It.
Yeah, I'm cacking it. I literally, as it's getting closer and closer, I'm like... Yeah, I've got to review it soon. Yes, yeah, it's going to be absolutely...
I started watching Zombieland last night. Oh, it's so funny.
Zombieland's epic. And they're making Zombieland 2, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, it's only Tatum and Rock, but like...
How long?
8 years.
Woody Harrelson. Oh, man.
The rules of surviving a zombie.
That was quality. The intro to that is epic. It's
one of the best intros to a film.
Epic, epic.
Where's my goddamn Twinkies? Bill and Murray.
Guys, we went off piste. But remember, Stranger Things out 22nd of October.
We said 27th?
27th, yeah.
There you go.
27th.
Lucky Netflix ain't supporting us,
isn't it? Yeah, isn't it? Sorry, Netflix. Although you can, just get in contact us at email. Sorry. Right, Dal, that is it for this week's Buzz News.
Join us next week for some more spooky news stories.
This week's main review, guys, is director Matt Reeves' War for the Planet of the Apes, starring Andy Serkis and Woody Harrelson. After the apes suffer unimaginable losses, Caesar wrestles with his darker instincts and begins his own mythic quest to avenge his kind. Dale, there's a trailer in there somewhere.
Years from now, your children will ask you, what did you do in the greatest war? And you can tell them, I fought to protect this world. And I'm the world's
most guiding boy. We created them.
But now, we will bring an end to their kind.
So guys, War for the Planet of the Apes. Can I just say, watching Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and obviously we've watched Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn really set this film up for me.
Yeah, I think you can kind of get away with not watching Rise.
Yeah.
But you do have to watch Dawn because there's a lot of reference back to like Cobra.
Cobra is basically like the naughty monkey that, you know, it really tries
where,
to back.
Yeah, where Caesar wanted to keep...
Yeah.
Like he wanted to make peace with the humans.
Yeah.
Cobra was, no, apes don't kill apes.
Yeah.
We go all out to kill. And we'll kill the humans and we'll take over.
Yeah.
So Cobra was kind of what the humans naturally feared, not Caesar.
That's it. I mean, obviously, when the film opened, obviously, we had some, obviously, little bits of dialogue to read. And then, obviously, it went straight into it. And it was just in this epic kind of forest.
Yeah.
And it was basically these guys just trudging through the forest, trying to find Caesar, trying to find, you know, the apes, like, kind of hideout or Caesar's hideout. And it was just so, to me, it kind of brought me back to kind of Predator.
Yeah.
They all surged up this hill, then they obviously see something, and then obviously then it's the charge to the stronghold, which was absolutely epic. That first scene was
yeah,
so
it grabs
epic.
You straight away, doesn't it?
It does. And the part when you see the apes congregate on their horses, they ride straight to the wall, and then they start throwing over their smoke bombs, and then it's just a forest. Of just, it's just green and smoke.
I think the biggest kind of question is, or the biggest, not an issue, it's probably more of an issue for me than others, is you don't know, or not that you don't know who to side with, but obviously naturally you want to be like, humans, we're on the side of humans. But then your lower instincts are like, I don't like seeing animals being hurt.
No,
on the animals, and you know the animals, the Caesar and that are in the right, they're not actually trying to cause any damage, they're just defensive. So the film had to go quite far out of its way to make the humans, or Woody Harris' character, to be as despicable and as evil as possible, and as mean as possible. So you had no torn alliances. You were, we're with Caesar all the way.
I mean, obviously, the turning point for when you kind of thought, oh my, you know, days, the humans are really doing wrong here, is when obviously they go and, spoiler, they kind of wipe out Caesar's, like, little family apart from one son.
Yeah, they for a bit of backstabbing through other apes that still follow Cobra, the bad ape.
Yeah. Which are called donkeys.
They get called, yeah, so the humans call these gorillas donkeys.
They carry, like, ammunition, don't they, for them and all stuff
that's,
like that.
So they basically, they betray Caesar. The Colonel, Woody Harris's character, goes in to kill Caesar, and instead he kills Caesar's son and wife.
Yeah.
Then sending Caesar into a downward spiral of revenge and darkness. Caesar sends the rest of the clan or the rest of the group off to this new place where it's supposedly safe.
Yeah.
And in doing so, he goes back on his own with his three companions, Rocket and two others, to go and fight, to go and kill the general. Now, unbeknownst to Caesar, the general actually captures the rest of the group and holds them hostage, and in doing so makes them work for him by building a wall at the rest of this, like, snow-based dam. Because the colonel is actually a renegade colonel who is basically...
He's holding arms, ain't he, really?
He
believes arms for the rest of the...
that when the humans start getting dumb through the virus, that they should be killed and not allowed to spread, whereas the other people, the other soldiers up north, believe that they should be allowed to be kept alive so they can be studied and a cure can be found. So they're coming down to fight the colonel. The colonel's getting the monkeys, the apes, to build the wall to protect him and his people. And along the way, Caesar meets this ape that's been able to live on his own that came from a zoo. Now, he was the comic relief of the film, and he was really good.
Bad.
Bad Ape. So he was really, really good. He kind of released the tension a little bit. But the story then kind of progresses that the North soldiers come down to kill the Colonel. The Colonel actually gets infected and the virus starts to spread on him. So after all of that, and the Colonel, like Tony was saying, the Colonel is an absolute badass throughout this entire film. You have no sympathy for him whatsoever, but Woody Harrelson plays him really, really well because he is, in his mind, he's doing the right thing. He's not doing anything wrong. He's fighting for what he believes in.
Yeah, he does.
And then for him to meet his end by ironically getting the virus himself and killing himself is kind of like poetic justice.
I mean, obviously, when the film's going through its motions, I got a touch of Western. I got a touch of, like, a bit of Django, a bit of Revenant. And it was kind of Caesar really finding himself and finding out what he's really made of. Because at the moment, when you've watched, obviously, Rise and Dawn, you kind of just think to yourself, he's only finding his feet now. And then, obviously, in Dawn, he's trying to be this leader and he's trying to just make sure that people follow him for the right reasons. Now, obviously, in War, he's trying to fight them inner demons because, obviously, his family's been killed.
Yeah.
And he's on the edge. And you can see it. Yeah. Obviously, the CG is so good in this, and Andy does such a great job that you can see the pain in his face at different points. At certain points,
it's really hard to tell that the apes are actually CG, which is great. The locations were stunning,
absolutely beautiful. For like the forest scenes,
the snow and then obviously
the snow scenes. It was such a well shot film. Thinking about it as a whole, the story really, I don't know, it wasn't strong enough for me in a sense. I thought it was epic.
It was a story of revenge, and that's kind of what it was.
It's a straightforward story of revenge. It could have had a couple more little nooks and crannies to it, like a couple of little twists and turns, which would have made it probably slightly better, which would have, done the trick, really. But you were always playing off the feelings of Andy, always playing off the feelings of Woody. There was one soldier, which is...
That confused me a little bit.
Yeah, he was there all the time. And I was thinking to myself, is he kind of the human that's going...
I thought he was going to turn and help the apes out.
Was he the confused human? Was he like, do I help apes? Do I help my kind? Like, he was just confused. Obviously, I'm not going to say what happens or anything like that to him, but to be quite fair, the comic relief I found was really refreshing in it. Obviously, Bad Ape, and it wasn't to a point that he was really silly. It wasn't to a point where he was kind of like, can you crack me a joke, please, because I need a bit of comic relief.
Yeah, when we say comic relief, it wasn't subtle, it wasn't making people laugh out loud. It was a nice kind of break from the darkness of both the humans doing to the apes and what the apes are doing back, and just the whole situation. He was kind of the diffuser of the whole tension, which it worked out really, really well because it was such well placed, and it was just because obviously he was learning to speak and he was learning to develop under himself, and just him being flamboyant. Like there's this scene where Caesar and all the other apes walk out of this house into the snow, and they go to they're carrying on their journey to the Colonel, and this bad ape comes out in a body warmer and a woolly hat.
That just made it for me. Like, as soon as we were introduced to him and then he come out like that was brilliant.
Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. I mean, obviously, it was, like I said, the film was trying to be something which it didn't really need to be. And I'm trying to say they were trying to take it, like, obviously it needed to be this deep, dark, fantastic.
Yeah, it had to have more in it.
Had to have just such deepness to it, and it didn't. The way it was portrayed was good. Bit more, slightly light-hearted, I think, within a couple of bit more twists and turns in it. It would have been absolutely epic. You feel for Caesar because there is moments in it where there is torture and stuff like that. And obviously, you kind of think to yourself, you kind of, like Dale said, sometimes in the films, you don't know whether to root for the humans or you don't know whether to root for the apes. And once you've got halfway through this film, you're then going, kind of side with the apes here. We need to sort ourselves out here. Do you know what I mean? But apart from that, I absolutely love it. Locations were great. You know, Woody Harrelson was great. Andy Serkis was great. Everything was great. I just wanted a bit more lightheartedness and just a, you know, like I keep saying, a few more twists and turns along the way.
I mean, I kind of get it. It was it's kind of all predictable. I think that's my biggest issue with the film, is it was all predictable. You were kind of like, right, he's welcomed his son back, he's happy to see his son, we've seen this story before, we see how this goes.
Yeah,
someone close to him dies, he goes on a revenge, and you can kind of predict it as you kind of go.
Yeah.
And it's the other little twirky parts in it that kind of take you off the beaten track that's already been there.
I mean, for me, obviously, this was going to be kind of my kind of, you know, one before Matt Reeves then goes on to do The Batman. So looking at his cinematography, you know, stuff, his direction, I liked it. I liked the look of the film. I liked the feel of the film. It was just the story, really, for me, that let it down. So I feel I'm ready to score this down, unless you've got any budgets or anything you want to bring up, my man.
Not on this one. It's a bit too early for the budgets. Budget talk. I'm quite happy to score.
So, I mean, obviously, you go first, Dale, please. I want you to go first.
I think it's a nice kind of solid 7 out of 10. I don't think it's progressed massively from Rise or Dawn, but I don't think it's kind of faltered from that era either. I think it's kind of all got a little bit better. And it kind of justifies its means.
Oh, it does. I mean, obviously, these have been such steady films, obviously, from Rise, Dawn, and now War. They've kind of been on point. And what you really expect from a Planet of the Apes film for this new generation, obviously, Rise setting that benchmark from the very, you know, very beginning. For me, I loved it. Cinematography. I do agree with Dow, 7 is so justified for this film. So here on the Weekend Buzz, guys, War for the Planet of the Apes gets a 7 out of 10. So, on to last week's winners, Dow. I want to know who's won last week's competition. Refresh us, Dow.
So the winners from last week, so last week's question was, so last week's question was, name us just one member of the Sinister Six. I would have taken absolutely anyone from the Sinister Six. And, you know, there's many a different...
There's quite a few. You know, like obviously, Dale read them. He gave you a list. You didn't even have to go on Google. You just had to watch. Dale told you, and then you just... You know, that was it. You went in the comments section.
Kind of went for it,
then,
didn't you?
Yeah.
So, we had quite a lot. And I can't give you the exact six, because there are so many different ones. But the ones we did get in were Dr. Octopus, Sandman, and then Kraven the Hunter. So they were all very, very good shouts there. Other ones you could have had were Chameleon or Carmeleon, however you'd like to pronounce
Shocker.
It. Shocker was in there. Electro's been in there. Venom's been in there at some point as well. I'm pretty sure Hydro Man got a cameo with him.
Yeah.
Mysterio's been in one of the versions as well. Rhino.
Did you say Venom?
Venom. Venom's had a stint. Anyway, the winner is with Dr. Octopus, Dragon Shark Ice.
There you go, Dragon Shark Ice. That book is winging its way onto you. We'll be in touch. You don't have to do nothing else. All right?
Bing, right. Bang, bosh.
Bosh. Bing, bong, bong. Right, Dale, this week's competition, I'm just going to get.
So, for those of you that haven't... You've been in like in a hole.
In a massive hole.
This is Rick and Morty Pocket Like You Stole It. This is a individual issue of Rick and Morty, the amazing animation with its crazy adult humour and themes. It is all available on Netflix if you haven't had a chance to check it out. So check out seasons 1 to 2. They've even been live streaming it as well. They've live streamed all season 1 and 2 back to back, including episode 1 of season 3.
This is my new guilty pleasure. Rick and Morty at the moment is my new guilty pleasure.
It is so funny.
It is funny, quirky. It's adult in places, fun in places. It's everything you want from just a quirky Adult Swim cartoon. Dale, have you got a question?
Oh, sorry, my phone's going off. Do I have a question? Yeah, I've always got a question.
Come on, Dale.
To know, very, very simply, is what character does Andy Serkis play in the Lord of the Rings franchise?
Oh! Is there a clue?
No, why should you need a clue? I mean, come on, people.
So, question again, please, Dale.
Name me the character that Andy Serkis plays in the Lord of the Rings franchise.
If you don't get that, you've been in a cave somewhere with Tom Hanks and, I don't know where else you're going to be from that. Remember, guys... we've got obviously lots coming up in a few weeks. We've got Manchester Comic Con coming up, guys, so don't miss out on that. Dale, what is our Rewind.
Oh, Rewind for next week. Right, okay. So, as most of you know, there is a massive film coming out next week, and we have already mentioned the director, Dunkirk, for our next episode, and our Rewind for that week will be The Prestige. Now, most people, when you go to Christopher Nolan, you'll go Inception. Now, don't get wrong, Inception is an outstanding film. Sometimes we could go with Batman as well. But Prestige is one of them underrated films that I don't think many Christopher Nolan fans have actually seen, or many people that know his work have actually seen. And it's a very, very good, very clever underlying film that I don't think gets as enough credit as it deserves.
So, next week's Rewind, The Prestige. Looking forward to watching that. Next week's review is obviously Dunkirk, guys. Remember, if it's not up 10 a.m. Saturday, it'll be up 10 a.m. on Sunday. Don't miss out on anything. Remember to like, subscribe. Remember, Comic-Con is coming up soon. MCM Comic-Con at Manchester. There'll be loads of interviews going up across the whole weekend of that. Also, guys, check out our Facebook page. The Stranger Things 2 poster is going to be going up over the next couple of days. Just keep in contact. We love speaking to you. You obviously like speaking to us. Like, subscribe, comment. Like I said, press that notifications bell so you don't miss out on anything. Thank you very much for watching. My name's been Tony.
I've been Dale.
And we'll see you all next week with Dunkirk.